welcome Roxanne.
Well, thank you. I'm sure you all are aware of how wonderful Amanda is. And so if you don't know her, like, be her friend, because she'll stick with you for 12 years through lots of moves and job changes and all those things. So my name's Roxanne. I work for the police department in Nashville, but I am not here on behalf of the police department of Nashville. Okay, so I do not, this is not what they, I'm not representing them right now. They're not held responsible for what I say. So like, just I am employed by them, but they did not send me. I'm here on my own dime, my own time. So just, we're connected, but we're not connected today. So if we can go ahead and pull up my PowerPoint, that would be great. We're gonna do a lightning round session of information. Teen sexual abuse, dating, violence, sex in general is a huge topic. It's huge. I could talk about this for 3 days. I won't, because you guys have things to do, but we could. So we're gonna go really fast. I'm gonna try and leave time for questions at different points if you have anything that's confusing or I didn't explain it well. I'm gonna try to leave time for a question at the end, and we're just gonna like charge on through. So why should you listen to me? I know Amanda like did a really awesome job already. First, because I know some stuff. Like, I have a degree in counseling, a master's degree in counseling from Tribeca Nazarene University. Do you guys go there, or you know? Oh, great. I went to Olivet for a year and then graduated from undergrad from Mount Vernon Nazarene. So I'm just like all over the place. So I did my graduate internship with the police department in the domestic violence division, which is now the family intervention program, and I work at the family safety center. So that's a lot of titles, and it's confusing. You don't need to know. It's no big deal. This is where I work. It's really awesome. It's a family safety center in Nashville. We just opened in January. And so I work there as part of the police department. We have court advocates. We have the Nashville Children's Alliance. We have Child Protective Services there. It's a really gigantic wraparound service building for the victims in Nashville. Adults, children, elderly, families, individuals. We try and cover it all. We don't serve the batterers, so they aren't allowed. We actually had an abuser show up this week and try and follow his victim inside. So it was like a stalking situation. We were on lockdown. The detectives were awesome and handled it, and he was arrested. So go us. I know people. This is a picture of the captain of the domestic violence division. She's right there. This is the mayor of Nashville, Mayor David Briley. And these are all people who won awards either individually or for their organizations for the service they provide to victims of domestic violence. We're a part of a coalition in Nashville. We're trying to spread throughout Tennessee and the country. So I did not personally win an award, but my company that I worked for at the time won an award for long-term service providers. I keep hitting the wrong button. I'm sorry if I blind you guys with the laser unintentionally trying to change the slide. People like me. Amanda likes me, so that's good enough reason to listen to me, right? So also, don't be alarmed. That's makeup. I go to the police academy in Nashville and run role-playing scenarios with the new recruits to help them learn how to interact with victims when they are called out. Domestic violence calls are the most dangerous calls that officers respond to, and they're the ones that they have to respond to the most. So I put on some black eye makeup, I pretend I'm a victim, sometimes I pretend I'm an abuser, and then I cry, and that really confuses them. And then they have to arrest me, and they feel really bad about it, and it's awesome. Okay, so take a deep breath. These slides are going to appear a lot, as much for my benefit as yours. I would not be doing my therapist's duty if I did not tell you there might be some trigger warnings through our conversation. We're talking about sex, talking about sexual assault. We know that 1 in 4 women have been sexually assaulted. So chances of you being in here and this bringing up painful memories for you, for us, is very real. So please take care of yourself. If you need to step out, if you need to talk to someone after, please take care of yourself as we talk through this. Also, we're gonna change topics a lot, and taking a deep breath and refocusing kind of sets you up to hear the next thing. So we're gonna do that a lot. So everyone practice again, take a deep breath. Okay, we're ready. We have a lot of things that we can talk about today. We've got conversations about sex, how to talk about consent, how to build confidence, cultural considerations, and other related topics. We're not gonna get through all of it, but I'm gonna go through as much of it as possible. This PowerPoint is available to you. My information will be at the end, so I don't know how you disseminate all that, or if you wanna email me and I'll send it to you, whatever. Whatever we don't get to today, you'll still have access to later. Oh yeah, for future reference. Okay, take a deep breath. You guys are good at that, good job. Okay, first of all, we are whole people. The Salvation Army is really good at addressing spiritual needs. The church in general is pretty good at addressing spiritual needs. We have spiritual needs. We need to be connected to a higher power. We need to know that there's something bigger beyond us and we have a purpose in life. So that, we're not gonna talk a ton about that today because I know you guys already do that, okay? We have emotional needs. This is my bread and butter. We need to connect with people. We need to know that we matter. We need to be in community, all of those things. And we have physical needs. We need air, we need water, we need food. And the weird thing about sex is that it kind of goes into all of them. And the reason is we're a whole person. We're not just one of these things. The church sometimes gets stuck in we have to address our spiritual needs, our emotional and physical needs are of the flesh and they're bad, so we ignore them. And we focus on the spiritual needs because if you just have more faith, everything will be better. And yes, but also we're whole people and we have to address all the needs. That's why sex is complicated, because it's a spiritual act, it's an emotional act, and it's a physical act. So, of all the things that we're gonna talk about today, if you don't write anything down, write these things down, because this is gonna be the foundation for what we talk about. We are whole people, we're gonna talk about that more. We need to learn how to manage our appetites, and that might feel weird to talk about in light of sex and that conversation, but I'll explain, and then you'll know what this means when you look back at your notes. Wrong button again. We need to experience the consequences of our behaviors. That's how we learn. So if we rescue ourselves too much from the consequences of our behaviors, then we learn that we'll always be rescued and we'll never experience the bad consequence. And we also need to know that when we do the right thing happens. So experiencing the consequences, both positive and negative, of our behaviors is really important. So those are the key things that you need to remember going home today. Hopefully it'll make more sense within the context of our conversation as we go. Okay, take a deep breath. Does anyone have any questions yet? Okay. We're gonna talk about sex. Sometimes I get the feeling that we only talk about sex during the month of February, and we do a series for our youth, and that's cool, but how many of you know they think about sex more than just in February? They do. We do. It does. So we got to be comfortable talking about it. We got to be comfortable having conversations about it. We don't need to talk about nitty-gritty details, but we need to be open to talking about sex with our teens and our children in our ministries and our kids that we actually parent, because they're talking about it. So we need to be talking about it with them so they hear stuff from us and not just from their friends or the media. Okay, so we're gonna have some conversations about sex. This is a video clip from Chris Valentin. He is a pastor at the Church of Bethel in Redding, California. You might know a lot of like Bethel worship songs. It's that Bethel. So we're gonna watch a video from him, a short clip, about why it's important to talk about sex.
And the question is, what does it mean to have a sex drive? That's a good question. I've been asking this all over the world in about 40 countries. I ask, we do these moral revolution conferences that typically fill with young people, and then we do a parent night, and I ask them, what does it mean to have a sex drive? Because I ask everybody, how many of you know God gave you a sex drive? Almost everybody raises their hand, except for the people who won't raise their hand for anything. And I say, what does it mean to have a sex drive? And everybody's, I don't know. It means you want to have sex with somebody. That's what a sex drive means. It means you want to have sex with somebody. And the goal is not to get rid of your sex drive. The goal is to learn how to manage your appetite.
The appetite.
This is too bad this is a revelation. People are sitting quiet. Write that down, honey. The goal is not to get rid of your sex drive. Like, God is not ashamed of your sex drive. I'd like to suggest to you that the world's in a mess, and a lot of it has to do with sexuality. It's funny that we'll talk about divorce, but as Paul Manwaring said to me tonight, we hardly ever talk about marriage. The number one reason why people get divorced is sexually incompatibility. And we don't talk about it in church. And guess who's teaching society about sex? The people who pervert it. And then we used to send little Johnny to school to learn about sex because we were ashamed to tell him at home. That's why the school system had to start telling Johnny about it. And then guess who, what they're teaching Johnny in school? You guessed it. In California, you have to teach kids. You have to teach kids by requirement. You have to teach kids. You could be bisexual, homosexual, heterosexual. You have to teach them about all the different avenues of sexuality. That's who's teaching your kids. But you know why they got the job? Because you're not doing it at home. Send Johnny off to learn about sexuality in school because that's the right place to teach them. And if you say anything about sex in church, people are like, this is church. Shouldn't we be talking about God in church? We are. He said, be fruitful and multiply. It was the first commandment given to man and woman. So how many know God gave you a sex drive? He's not ashamed of it. He actually celebrates it. Aren't you glad that, like, you didn't, like, you know, how many know it was God's idea to make it fun? This is the way we tell, this is the way we teach sex to our kids. You're not going to like it. It's painful. You could go blind. You could get a disease. That's the way we talk. God doesn't tell a sex story like that. Aren't you glad, like, God didn't make you, like, lay on a, you know, sit on an egg for 9 months like birds? I mean, how many people would be here? If we were like birds, you know, all right, your turn. No, no, I sat on them yesterday. Trust me, you wouldn't need birth control. So the world shames sex. I'm sorry, perverts sex. And religion shames sex. Religion's like, be careful how you say that. Let's whisper it in the corners of our homes. And then our children, then we wonder why our children are so enticed by sexuality. Everybody else is teaching them sex but us. I'm going to have people call and say, hey, my son's 16. I don't know if he's ready to come to the Moral Revolution Conference. Dude, where are you coming from? I mean, the problem is that 10-year-olds are off and ready. That's part of the struggle. And do you know the principle of first mention? It goes like this. It says, whoever teaches you about a subject first, what they teach you becomes the foundation in which for the rest of your life you will view that subject. And I believe that God created us like that because he intended for children to be taught by their mother and father. So when you teach kids about sex first, and then little Henry, their friend in, you know, sixth grade, talks to them about sex, they will measure what Henry says by what you told them. But guess what happens if Henry tells them first? When you tell your kid at 14, and the school's already told them at 12, they will measure what you said by what the school taught them. And they tend to scrap whatever doesn't measure up with the first thing they were taught, because that tends to be the foundation of everything they believe. Now, can that change? Of course it can. But how many know it takes a conscious effort to say, I was lied to, that is not true, I will no longer believe that. But wouldn't it just be easier just to lay a foundation the way God intended for your kids? So that when you share with them, and somebody else shares with them a year later, they go, I know what to believe about that. My parents taught me about that.
Okay, so he has started an organization called Moral Revolution. They have a website, they have a podcast, they have blogs, they have social media accounts. I would highly recommend you checking them out. They have conferences where you take the teens and the parents to learn how to talk together about sexuality. And then they also have, well, I'll talk about that next one, next. So, how early do you think you should start having conversations with your kids about sex, whether they're your own kids or the kids that you minister to? How early do you think that needs to begin? 11? First or second grade? I would argue that starting at like 2 years old is pretty great. I actually do want to pull up that e-course info, if you don't mind. That's actually what I was going to tell you about. I forgot it was right there. So when we talk to kids about sex, if you start talking to them when they're 2 years old, you're not talking to them about sexual intercourse. Okay? That's inappropriate. It's actually kind of abusive to talk to them that early. But what we are talking to them about when they're two is how to manage their appetites. So when you're going through Target and they start throwing a fit at the checkout line because they want that piece of candy, you tell them no. And they scream and holler and kick and scream and holler and throw a fit, make a scene, and you keep telling them no. Because if they learn that the more I yell and fuss, I get what I want, what does that tell them when they're a teenager or in college and someone is telling them, no, I don't want to do that? They're like, well, I'll just pressure you and push and yell and scream and throw a fit until I get what I want. Okay, so it's very connected. We have to learn how to manage our appetites in order to create healthy sexuality in our kids. So when I say our kids, I mean the teens, the children's ministries, whether you parent them or minister to them, it's all the same in my mind for this purpose. So this is the Moral Revolution website, right up here. They have topics, blogs, events, e-courses, yada, yada, yada. This particular, maybe it's not, there's an e-course up here for $50, Sex, Church, Culture. They just did a conference on this, I think maybe a month ago. And so you can buy it for $50, watch the sessions. They have all of these sessions involved, are included with the e-course, and just like incredible information. So I would highly recommend diving into that. It's only $50, and it's on your computer. So you could project it, and 50 people could watch it and pay you a dollar. And there you go. Okay. So So this is an incredible resource. I will refer to them often because they're like blowing my mind. I just discovered on the way here on Saturday that they have a podcast. And so I was listening to some of the podcasts and I was like, now I have to change my whole speech. But I didn't. You can listen to it on your own time. So what we need to do is learn how to manage appetites. And this is a huge theme for sexual assault and sexual health with teens, with adults, everyone that we meet up with, because it fosters a sense of entitlement. Amanda and I have been talking about entitlement all weekend long. It is a really pervasive cultural norm that we are entitled to the things that we want. So if I want to have sex with somebody, it's just sex. And so I'm just going to go get it. It's available to me. I deserve it. I've earned it. If you don't believe me, watch the documentary Liberated on Netflix. It was created by some of the people from the Moral Revolution camp. There's a lot of graphic images and there's a lot of graphic language, so like warning about that. But it's a really big eye-opener on the idea of entitlement. It has to begin with us at home. That principle of first mention that Chris talked about, if they hear it from us first, that's what they measure all the rest of their information by. If the average age, anyone care to guess the average age that kids are exposed to pornography? 7 or 8. It's actually 11, so whew, it's not 7 or 8, but it's 11. That's where they're learning their messages about sex and sexuality. Even if they aren't looking for it, their friends might have shown it to them. They might have found it on someone else's phone that wasn't parent protected, things like that. They're learning about it. They're learning about sex through porn, and what does porn tell you? Girls never say no. You can have it whenever you want. The rougher, the better. Lies, okay? Can we agree? Those are all lies? Okay. Again, it's about appetite management. And what are we waiting for anyway? And what I mean, I don't mean about the conversation. I mean, why are we telling our teens, why are we telling our churches that we need to wait to have sex until we're married? Like Chris said, we're talking, well, it's like really painful. It's like all these terrible things. Okay, if I'm looking at my married friends, I'm not married. If I look at my married friends and they have miserable marriages, and they're like, we don't have sex anyway, or it's really bad, or whatever. Like, what's the point in waiting for marriage if it seems really awesome right now and I'm not married? So for all the married people in the room, you need to have good sex lives. Take care of it with your families, like with your spouse. Because that's like when you have a vision of a good marriage and someone who's like, yeah, we love having sex with each other. It's awesome. That's what you wait for. That's what you're holding out for. And we need those examples in the church. We need them in the children's ministries. We need them in the youth ministries, especially because that's when kids really start noticing their sex drive. And if they know that it's good when they're married, when you're married, then it helps know why you're waiting. Like, what's the point? What is the value of waiting if I can just get it now? We're very much an immediate, what's the phrase? Immediate instant gratification, yes. And so why am I waiting? What is the point? It can't be I'm waiting for marriage because the spouse is the prize. That is a lot of pressure. Okay? And that breeds entitlement for the people who are remaining pure because they're like, I'm pure. Where's my spouse? Why am I 34 and still not married? Why are the 18-year-olds getting married? I'm not married. And so we get this sense of entitlement when it's for the when marriage is the prize. Marriage isn't the prize. Jesus is the prize. Okay? So we pursue purity because it's a sacrifice we can offer to the Lord in our relationship, and it costs us something. Just like when David wanted to sacrifice to God, he went to this farmer. He wanted the field. The farmer was like, sure, take it. Take the farm, take the land, take the animals. And David's like, that doesn't cost me anything. I'm not giving that to God. It's got to cost me something. And therefore, if it costs us something to protect it, that's with our relationship with the Lord that puts the focus on him and not on the spouse. The spouse isn't the prize. Jesus is the prize. Okay, I'm going to breeze through some of these infographics because you can see them in the PowerPoint when you download them, or you can Google them. So these are actually topics, though, for teens. So ask an adult about what they've learned from their past relationships, tips for adults to how to have the conversation, share stories about your first crushes, dates with a teen, please don't date a teen. ask about their first dates, ask about their crushes, have conversations, talk about the changes that happen as relationships get more serious. Discuss warning signs of relationship abuse and what teens can do to protect themselves. These are all conversation starters you can have with your kids. So, we don't need to go there, but this is a link to a website. If you take the PowerPoint, all of the websites are like listed out at the end, so you can like click on them or type them out or whatever. This particular website has information for parents. Let's go ahead and go there. I'm going to talk about it, so I might as well look at it. This is not necessarily a Christian website, but all truth is God's truth. So if you find it on a secular website, it's still God's truth. That's a soapbox for a different day. For parents, if you go up to the Parents tab, there are printable PDFs and infographics to help you talk to your kids about sex. If you scroll down, there are all these topics. Teach your child consent, understanding consent, simple ways to teach young kids about consent. And it goes on and on, talks about signals of someone who's a groomer, if they're grooming your child for sex trafficking or child porn, things like that. I think these resources are really interesting. Mom, help me stay safe, and Dad, help me stay safe. It goes through, if you want to open one up, you can, but it's a PDF it doesn't matter which one. it has conversation starters from your kid's perspective starting at 0 to 2 years old. So, Mom, your touch is so important when I'm a baby. It helps me feel safe and gives me early awareness of what safe touch is. Okay? So it goes through all of the ages and helps you know what your kids are looking for and what they're asking for in the realm of sexual health. Now, what they tell you to say may be different than your beliefs, because I don't know that this is a Christian organization, but you can still take the notion, the context of what they're talking about, what's okay for a 13 to 15-year-old, and insert your beliefs and values that you want your children to talk about. So that's a really great resource and website. It's called defendinnocence.org. Okay, I don't know about you, I need a deep breath. So I can't talk if I don't breathe, right? Okay, so developmentally appropriate information, that's the defendinnocence.org. The next one is leadership and parental resources. This is a link for the Moral Revolution page where it has all the blogs and information like that. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Sometimes we get nervous, like, well, if I bring it up, what if they haven't been thinking about it? And then I start it. Well, fine, you start it. They're gonna start thinking about it eventually, and they might as well start it with you, okay? Stop teaching girls that boys are mean to them because they like them. Also, stop teaching boys that that's how you show a girl you like them. Again, another soapbox for another day, probably. What all healthy relationships need. We're gonna go fast through these. Affection, that's not necessarily just sexual touch, okay? You need affection, you need attention, acceptance, appreciation, and allowing. Allowing is that freedom to be who you are. I just am who I am, and I'm accepted for that. So all relationships need that. We need these in our relationship with our parents. We need all five of these in our relationships with our friends. We need all of these in the relationships with our significant others, our spouses. If we don't have one of them, chances are we overcorrect in a different relationship to get that need met. So if you think about kids and the way you interact with your children, when they're young, you like love on them, you kiss them, you hold their hand, you do all the things. And then when they hit a certain age, you kind of stop because you're like, well, they're older now, you know, and that shouldn't stop. I mean, maybe change it up a little bit, but it shouldn't stop, because if they stop receiving affection from you, even as their youth pastor or children's pastor, they're going to start looking for it somewhere else. And it might be in an unhealthy situation, like a teen dating situation. Okay. So these are found in the book, How to Be an Adult in Relationships. I put this up there because I want to give credit where credit is due, but proceed with caution with the book, because they kind of like take, they're like, Jesus said this, but the Buddha also says this. And so if you can't like separate it out, then don't read it. Just know these are the five things. But it's still an interesting book. But again, all truth is God's truth. So take what is true and get rid of what else, whatever else doesn't fit. Okay, deep breath. Any questions so far? Comments, thoughts, anything? Okay. Congrats on totally violating my trust. So this is a website, thatsnotcool.com. Oh, I was blocking right there. They're on social media. They're kind of like a snappy, sarcastic, salty, like call you out on your bad relationship behaviors. Like, you're violating my trust. Good job. I appreciate that about you. Like, and we'll have more of these later. We'll talk about it more later. There's an app, actually, that we'll talk about in a minute. So we're going to talk about consent. There's a video that I am not going to show you because it has some pretty salty language. But if you need to explain consent to a teen or a child or your neighbor or your boyfriend or girlfriend, talk about it in terms of, would you like a cup of tea? If they say no, okay, they said no. Don't make them a cup of tea, okay? If they say, eh, I don't know, that's not consent, don't make them a cup of tea. If they say yes, sure, make them a cup of tea, and then if you give it to them and they're like, nah, I changed my mind, they still don't have to drink the cup of tea, okay? You don't try and make someone drink a cup of tea if they're passed out. Okay? You guys are smart. Okay? Consent means making an active choice to agree. So it's not just about not saying no. They have to actively agree to the cup of tea. Okay? If your teen felt they had no good option, it wasn't consent. So even if they're like, well, I only did it because I was really afraid he was going to hurt me or she was going to hurt me, that's not consent. It wasn't a consensual act, okay? Amanda, I saw you taking pictures. You can take pictures of these slides if you want. I don't care. That's why I'm standing over here, so I'm not in your way. If someone tries to convince you or your teen to do something sexual, even if you've done it before, but doesn't really want to now, they can still say no. Like, just because you agreed to a cup of tea yesterday does not mean you have to agree to a cup of tea today, okay? It's an active choice every time. Your incessant calling makes my phone weep. I like how sarcastic these are. It kind of like feeds that in me. My little black dress does not mean yes. What is the cause of rape and sexual assault? The way you dress?
The cause of rape is someone sexually assaults you without your permission. Mm-hmm. Well, not assault you without their permission, but has sex with you without your permission.
Mm-hmm. What are the other things that we hear are the reason someone gets raped? The way they dress? The way you carry yourself.
Reputation.
Like if a girl likes to hang out with guys, mm-hmm. Like, well, why is she hanging out with all those guys?
Right. She hangs out with them. She must be asking for it. She must want it. Okay. Those are reasons that we're told in the media, but they're not reasons. The reasons rape happens is because someone feels entitled to a sexual act. Okay? They make a decision, put their needs above someone else, and take what they want. Okay? So another way to talk about this, it's not a video that I put in here, I probably should have, but there's a video that has the example of a robbery being investigated by a detective. So, sir, what happened today? Well, I got robbed. Okay, well, is that what you were wearing? You're in a suit. It kind of looks like you're asking for it. Like, were you, like, trying to be robbed today? You got a really fancy watch on. It's kind of like flaunting your riches. It's like, please rob me. Okay? It's not the same. We hear those questions when we see someone who's been raped. Like, well, she was asking for it. She was wearing it. She's flaunting it. No. She still gets to say no. And that should still be respected. Coercion. If your teen is feeling pressured to do something sexual and doesn't know how to get away from it or is afraid that saying no will break up the relationship, it may be a sign that he or she is being coerced or emotionally forced to do something against his or her will. It's similar to consent. If they're feeling pressured to do it, it's sexually assaultive and abusive behavior because they don't feel like they have a choice. This is a helpful PDF we're not going to look at today. Don't worry about that. I regret having that slide in there. Okay. these are options or ways to teach consent to kids. Like, what is it? It means asking kids for their permission to do something and accepting their answer. So if you are going to a family Christmas party and you're like, go give Aunt Tina a hug. And the kid's like, They're like, no, it's your Aunt Tina. Go give her a hug. And you're like, Like, go do it. Then you're not respecting their personal physical boundary. Offer them a different option. How about you give her a high five or bump elbows or a fist bump or do a funny dance with her or something? Like, there are other ways that you can acknowledge Aunt Tina without forcing that person, that kid, to go give her a hug. Teaching them that young sets them up well for when they're teens and older, because you can say, well, I feel bad. He wanted to, like, give me a hug, but I didn't really want to, but I didn't want to make him feel bad, just like my Aunt Tina. So I'm sorry if anyone's named Tina in here. I just pulled that out of my hat. So these are respecting boundaries. It's okay if your friend didn't want to sit by you on the bus today. Sometimes you don't want to sit by that friend on the bus either. It's okay. It doesn't mean they're not your friend. It doesn't mean they don't like you. They just didn't feel like it today. It's okay. Teach how to ask for consent. Help the child think about how their actions might make another person feel. So, like, some of your kids might be, like, naturally very huggy. And you're like, awesome. I love that you're so loving. But, like, not everyone feels that way. Some people just are, like, very anti-hug. And that's okay. So maybe offer them a handshake or a fist bump or whatever. Do you guys see those, like, YouTube videos of, like, teachers with the kids going into the classrooms and they have, like, a little sign on the side beside the door, like, which one do you want today? Do you want to dance? Do you want a hug? Do you want a high five? And the kid says, okay, I want that one. Yes, great. I want this one. Yay, we're going to do a dance. I don't dance, so I would never pick that one. But anyways. Things like that. Those are things that you can implement into your ministries to say, hey, how would you like to be greeted today? Okay. You model that by doing those sorts of things, by saying, hey, it kind of looks like you need a hug right now, but, like, do you want a hug or no? Like, maybe a pat on the shoulder if someone's feeling upset. And if they want a hug, then go ahead and give them an appropriate side hug, you know, awkward, appropriate side hug. Model respect for boundaries. Does anyone know about Henry Cloud? Anyone recognize that name? He's like the guru of boundaries. So he has a boundaries book. He has a boundaries book for teens. Boundaries for teen dating. Boundaries for couples. Boundaries for marriages. Boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. He also has a Facebook page that he will frequently post articles about boundaries. So this is a very important topic. We need to teach our kids about boundaries. It's like they have a house with a yard, and their boundaries are their fence. What's inside the fence is what they're responsible for. What's outside the fence, they're not responsible for, and they get to choose who comes in and out the gate. Okay? That's all Dr. Cloud. I can't take credit for that. Take a deep breath. We're doing good. I'm trying to be respectful of time. Any questions? Okay. Is this helping you at all?
Yes.
Is this? Okay. I just needed that like boost of confidence. Just okay. So we got to teach them to be kind and confident. And that means that it's okay. Just because you say no doesn't mean you're a bad person. Just because you deny somebody what they wanted because of your consent and your boundaries, not because they told you no and you took it anyway, doesn't mean that you're a bad person or you're mean or a whole other slew of words that people call you if you tell them no. Because they're not used to being given a boundary or not having their entitled desires met. Appetite management. This is just as important at 2 years old as it is at 12 and 22, okay? What happens to your teens and young adults if they're practicing purity and they don't get married right away? They still have to practice appetite management. They still have to know how to manage their sex drive. What happens when you get married and your spouse doesn't want to have sex when you want to have sex? Appetite management, folks. Still can't take sex from your spouse without consent, okay? This is another website or PDF, I kind of forget which, but it's information on like statistics of teen dating and teen dating violence and things like that. Stats are kind of boring, so you can read them if you want. You can be a good person with a kind heart and still say no. I will keep talking about that. These are teen dating violence, different ways that it occurs. Physical is pinching, hitting, shoving, or kicking. Emotional, threatening, name-calling, harming a partner's self-worth. Sexual, forcing a partner in a sex act when he or she doesn't or cannot consent. Pattern of stalking is a pattern of unwanted, harassing, or threatening tactics that cause fear. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. And I find that so hard for them, especially mm-hmm. the girls. Especially
yes.
Around nine.
Yes.
They struggle so much with that. And the longer I worked with middle school kids, I saw that become harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
And some middle school girls were actually participating in different sex acts
mm-hmm.
because they had been taught that, like, a good person doesn't say no. You
right.
do what your friends want to do.
Right.
You want to have friends. You want to be a part of the
group. Mm-hmm.
And if the group is doing this,
yeah.
you have to do it, even
yep.
Christian girls.
Yep.
So I think parents are missing that one, because
mm-hmm.
that was like really new to me.
Yeah.
My daughter was an adult
yeah.
at that time, but that's one that we really need to pay attention to.
It's very, very true, and we're going to talk more about that later, because that is a soapbox I'm going to get on today. Just you wait. We're going to go through these. Okay. This you can't read. You can Google it though. Just Google power and control wheel. This is my bread and butter with every client that I meet with. There's teen power and control wheels, there's adult power and control wheels, there's LGBTQ, like gender sensitive power and control wheels, there's elderly power and control wheels. They're all over the place. They're developed by a company in Minnesota, in Duluth. So when we think of violence, we usually think of physical and sexual violence. That's what gets reported. That's what we can visually see if they've like left a mark. And that is violence, like it is. But all of this stuff in the middle here is also abusive and unhealthy relationship warning signs, red flags. We've got peer pressure, anger and emotional abuse, using social status, intimidation, minimize, deny, and blame. This one is huge. Minimize, deny, and blame. So you brought it on yourself you made me angry, so I hit you. Like, it's your fault. If you would just stop making me mad, I wouldn't have to hit you. Okay? Threats, sexual coercion, isolation and exclusion. If you start noticing your teens or kids pull away from their friends, their friend group, because of a dating relationship they're in, big red flag. I could talk about this for a very, very long time. This is the LGBTQ sensitive one. We're gonna move on. Okay, so this is a cycle of abuse. Again, you can Google this if you want. So what this looks like is there's a honeymoon phase. We're down here. Things are great. He's buying me flowers. He's taking me on dates. He's so wonderful. We're just like over the moon. And then we get this calm phase where like we don't go on as many dates because, you know, we're teens. It's expensive. We're adults. It's expensive. Let's be real. And so you kind of get in like this calm groove. This, a side note, is not a cycle for every relationship. This is a cycle for abusive relationships, okay? It's different when the relationship is healthy. So we've got this sense of calm, and then tension starts building. They get a little like critical, and you don't know why, or they seem more stressed lately, and you feel like you're walking around on eggshells trying to manage their emotions for them so that they don't yell at you. And then there's an abusive incident, an explosive incident, where they like clear the table in a rage or throw a chair against the wall or punch you or grab you or whatever. And then you come back into the honeymoon phase. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Here are some flowers and chocolate. Let's go on a date. I'm gonna, like, we'll go on a vacation together. I'm gonna make it up to you. It's never gonna happen again. I'm so sorry. I was really stressed at work. I was drunk. I was on drugs. Whatever the excuse is, I'm so, so sorry. It was a one-time deal. It's never happening again. Then you go in the calm phase, tension building, another thing, another abusive incident. Okay, so the reason I bring this up is a safety concern. What we know through research is if a relationship hits this abusive incident once, the chances of it happening again are like exponentially huge. Like, you can pretty much bank on if it happened once, it'll happen again. And most people will say, no, 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 it was a one-time deal. He's actually a really nice guy. He's a really good guy. His fruit's really bad, but he's actually a really good guy. And so they say, well, I'm sure that we're going to get counseling. We're going to do all the things. It's going to happen again because his tension's going to build, and that's what's going to happen. I say he and she and those a lot. I don't mean that it can never happen to guys. It just mostly happens to women. Or the guys don't report it. That's a whole different thing. But it can happen for men too. So if it happens once, it'll happen again. It'll take less time to get back around to that abusive incident than it did the first time. So it might have been a year. You might have been together a year before this happened. But then it'll be like 6 months, and then it'll be 3 months, and then it'll be a week, and then it's happening every day. You're going through this cycle when it's really bad. Also, the abusive incident gets worse over time. It escalates. So maybe the first time he punched the wall, but the next time he grabs you, and the next time he punches your face, and the next time he strangles you, and the next time he shoots you. Okay? It doesn't usually escalate quite that fast, but it escalates and it speeds up. So what are some signs of a healthy teen relationship, please? Can we talk about something nice? You give each other space for friends and family. You're not isolating. You're not secluded. It's okay to disagree. This is a huge skill that needs to be taught to all the kids and teens. How do you disagree without ruining a friendship? And adults. Yes, it's very true. Your physical boundaries are respected. You feel in control of your life. There's no textual harassment. So no like sexting and like harassing you over a text. Hey, send me a nude picture, whatever. Why won't you send it? You're such a prude, whatever. Confidence is really important. Assertive versus aggressive. This is a communication piece. Saying no isn't aggressive. It's assertive. Please stop doing that. It's assertive. It's not aggressive. But we've been conditioned, we've been taught, especially as women, I would argue that especially as men in the church, they've been taught they can't be assertive either. I would argue that, but you can correct me if I'm wrong because I'm not a man. Okay, soapbox alert. Get ready. Take a deep breath. Okay. All right, I'm actually going to get on the box here. Okay, I am not as young as I look. I promise. I got carded going into a movie in June. People tell me it should be okay or I should be happy about it, but I would like credit for the life that I have lived, okay? So, I'm in my 30s. I grew up in the church during the I Kiss Dating Goodbye, True Love Waits movement, okay? You can come up on the soapbox with me. What this taught me, I'm going to get done because I feel uncomfortable up there. What this taught me, and I'm an individual, I process things different. Not everyone thinks the same way as I do. I'm also a 4 on the Enneagram, so like I kind of take pride in that. I'm unique, right? So when I was growing up and listening to this, mind you, this is not what my parents taught me. My parents would have been way cooler about it. I didn't ask questions. I didn't want to be seen as stupid. So if I didn't understand something, I just listened until I got enough information to get it. With I Kiss Dating Goodbye, the way I internalize that is guys are visual. They're highly tempted and easily tempted, and they can't control it. Boys will be boys. Okay? So, therefore, it's my responsibility to manage it for them by what I wear, where I go, what I do. That takes a lot of power away from me as a woman, because then I just grow up being afraid of men. I'm really afraid of them because I don't think that they're going to believe me when I say, no, please don't do that. Stop. Okay? That is a huge disservice to men. They can hold out. They can respect consent by saying boys will be boys. That takes so much power away from men. Because they're like, well, I can't help it. Boys will be boys. Okay, it's not true. They have strength to say no, to treat people respectfully, to adhere to consent. And that's not what I absorbed through my growing up years in youth group. Going to True Love Waits conferences, I Kiss Dating Goodbye. I learned I can't say no because they're not going to listen anyway. They can't control it. Therefore, they're very scary, okay? It's not true. It's taken me a lot of years to realize, no, I can say no. He's getting really handsy. I can be like, hey, stop. And now the culture is saying, well, everyone's got to have a safe word, okay? Safe words, because no doesn't actually mean no. So I got to know what your safe word is. Okay, you know what my safe word is? Stop it. Stop. Okay? And that's not aggressive. That is assertive. If I go and punch your face, that's a little aggressive unless you really aren't stopping and I have to defend myself. But that's not aggressive, that's assertive, and it's okay for women to be assertive. It's okay for men to be assertive. In that documentary that we watched, that Liberated documentary, some of the guys they interviewed said, well, I did all this stuff when I was a teen because my friends made fun of me because I was still a virgin. Okay? So I don't really want to do it either. I wasn't really ready, but I didn't want my bros to be making fun of me. Okay? They can be assertive too. Guys need to be assertive too. They need to be taught it's okay to do what, like to say no to something you don't want to do. I don't know how to reconcile that with parents who have to teach kids to like obey the rules. Because like sometimes you have to do stuff you don't want to. But I'll leave that to your parents. That's not my deal. Okay, 43% of LGBTQ youth reported being victims of physical dating violence compared to 29% of heterosexual youth. These are forms of digital abuse. Every victim responds to sexual assault differently. So how do you know when something is sexual assault or harassment? How do you know? We know because the person who is violated says it is. If we can't measure sexual assault by intent, I didn't mean to hurt her. I didn't mean to offend him. It doesn't matter. Intent doesn't matter. It's what actually happened. So what offends me might not offend you. But if it offended me or made me uncomfortable or violated my boundaries or consent, then it's harassment. Okay? It's a different way to think about it, but it's real. Same with the robbing example. Okay? Did the person, like, I didn't mean to like offend him when I robbed him. I just wanted his money. Okay, it doesn't matter, you still robbed him. You still took his stuff. Okay? Generational abuse is really important to consider when you're working with kids who have been in violent relationships because they might have seen it modeled from their parents. Same with needing to see healthy relationships and healthy sexuality. It impacts the violent side too. If they've seen it as acceptable in violence, then they're gonna accept it for themselves. Some cultures are more individualized and some are more collective. So they might not report abuse or violence or harassment the same way. I think of a lot of Asian cultures are very collective, so they're like, you'll bring shame on us if you say anything, so just don't say anything, okay? Machismo, I don't know if I'm saying that right, it's with Hispanic cultures. Please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm white, so I can only say the white things. I just like own it, I can't help it. I mean, I can't help it, I try. It's this very like macho sense. And so they're like, well, yeah, I'm gonna dominate my woman. That's what we do. Arranged marriage and FGM, we're just gonna like breeze by that because we're talking about children and teens. We should talk about it, but it's uncomfortable. We'll talk about it. Arranged marriages still happen, and they happen in the U.S. Okay, it's not just overseas. So you have to check for Illinois or whatever state you're in because the legal marrying age is different in every state. But if they're getting like parental permission to marry, especially if there's a big age gap, warning signs, there's probably rape or sexual assault that's happening. FGM is female genital mutilation. That also happens in the US. It's not just overseas. And so it's something we need to be aware of. It probably won't come up a lot for you because it's not like super common, but it does happen. So any questions? That's kind of like a yes.
Mm-hmm. So, like, how do we show her, you know, mm-hmm. like, no, punching that kid in the face isn't going to help, even though that's what your parents do. You know, she's
right.
13, she's grown up 13 years, I've seen mm-hmm. punching is the way you get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how are you supposed to teach her that it's not?
Yeah, it's really hard with kids and teens. This is why I mostly counsel adults. Because they don't have a lot of power. So they're in a family, they have to go back to their family after they've been with you at youth group. They don't have a lot of power. When I'm counseling a child or a teen, I find myself often getting really mad at the parents. I'm like, let me at them. But that's not what is helpful to the kid, right?
Mm-hmm. this is what goes on at your home, but we don't do that here.
Yeah.
And then you give them some tools to use in the separate environment when they're upset. This is what we do in this environment when we get upset or when someone is in our personal space. This is how we take care of here. So you have to really let them know that you understand and you respect their home. You never want them to feel that you're disrespecting their parents or what's going on, even though they might think it's crazy. But you have to say, this is over there and this is here.
Yep. Show them by modeling how you interact with people. How do you resolve conflict with one of the youth sponsors? Okay? A lot of times we like take care of that behind closed doors, which is okay. But sometimes like the kids need to see the healthy way you kind of argue through your disagreement and come to a resolution because they don't know another way. Yeah.
Which one am I going to incorporate in my own life?
Yeah. One thing I would also encourage, if you do suspect abuse in the home, you need to check to see what Illinois state laws are about mandated reporting, but also you can safety plan. Safety planning is huge. So if you think they're in an unsafe environment, maybe you already have called and made a report or whatever, then you figure out ways to keep the kids safe. Okay, if you see these things happening, you need to call 911. You need to go to a neighbor's house. Who are safe people in your life that you can call? If you don't think it's like to the level of 911, who can you call to talk about it or like process through with it? And safety planning will really, really help them, just like give them a plan of action for when something's going down and they're really nervous about it or it makes them uncomfortable. Same with consent. If you run scenarios with your kids about like, okay, someone's pressuring you for sex, what do you do? Let's run through that scenario. How do you be assertive? Start with something like really benign, like someone who always wants to hug you at church. Okay, you hate it when they hug you at church. So run through that scenario. How can you communicate your boundary? Please don't, I would prefer it if you didn't hug me. Okay? Does that help at all?
I have another question.
Yes.
If we have the time.
Yes. I think we're doing pretty good.
Thinking about collective cultures, do you have any thoughts or advice of how do we talk about, in those settings, how do you talk about consent and how do you talk about reporting and how do you talk about those things where you are afraid to maybe bring shame on you? Or a family or another family, because I work in an Asian setting and we've had issues like this where they try to deal with the issue just by not talking about it, thinking it'll go away. So what are some pointers of how to maybe talk in those collective groups?
A big thing is kindness and compassion, right? We're understanding, we're like, hey, I get that we don't do things the same way. That's cool. I love how we're different. However, we need to do some education on like what the cycle of abuse is, because safety is king. If someone's not safe, you can't really talk about other stuff. Because that's the, like, if they're not safe, then, and then they die. I mean, that's pretty extreme. But, like, can't help them after they're dead. So we have to focus on safety first. Anyone here a psychology major or social work or anything like that? You know Maslow's hierarchy of needs? So the very foundational need that we all have is physical safety. We need our physical needs to be met. So we start there. If the kids are, like, pretty safe, and it's the parents' relationship that's the problem, we can tease that out a little bit and be like, hey, I don't want to like bring in a bunch of people about this, but like, would you be willing to sit down and talk about safety? You can do your relationship however you like, but like, let's talk about safety first. And then if that helps and is opening the door to more conversation and understanding, then you can kind of work through some of the power and control wheel and be like, hey, I'm noticing some red flags a little bit. So like, do I have the story right? Am I on the right track? And just conversation is really like the way in. It's through relationships, right? Building relationships and building that trust. And sometimes cultures are different. They're just different. You don't agree. It's fine. But safety has to be okay. Safety has to be established. Otherwise, you got to like mandate reporting stuff. Does that help? Sort of. Not really. I mean it's a big question.
That's it is helpful.
Okay. Did I see another hand around somewhere?
I was just going to comment that in terms of when, and that's psychology, but almost done. Couple courses over.
Yay.
In terms of how we approach people, youth especially, I think it's always great two things. One, try to guide them in a way that makes it their idea. Mm-hmm. It gives them ownership to thinking of, you know, when you talk about think about constructive conflict resolution, mm-hmm. not just telling them this is what we do, but you're going to model that for them as you already said. But what can we do? Make them part of the team. Mm-hmm. That also gives them power and shows their value. Mm-hmm. They're valuable to you. Mm-hmm. In that relationship. Secondly, I know a big thing in psychology too, I'm sure in counseling, many of you probably already know this, but as we approach and thinking about like the cultural differences, to talk about things in I feel statements. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's, you know, and it just kind of opens it up. It's not like, well, you do this, mm-hmm. I do this, mm-hmm. you do this. Tell me what I do.
Right.
But I feel like this is different. I feel like this is off here. Mm-hmm. And then see if they validate or try to open the door using a generalized, like, ideal statement. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is. One of my favorite ways to start a sentence with my clients when I want to, like, challenge them on something is, I'm curious. What would happen if? Or, I'm curious to know what happens when your parents are fighting. What does that look like? I'm curious how you know that you want to do that with your boyfriend. How do you know that's what you want to do? And putting the question back on them, like you said, kind of drawing them into the solution. I'm wondering what kind of solutions you think would help you be able to say no more assertively. What do you think you need in order to feel more confident in saying no? I'm curious.
And I think some of that also, with what you just said and what she said, is education.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's a lot of education.
In some cultures, what you might think is wrong and what the state of Illinois says is wrong, that culture does not say mm-hmm. that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've grown up in the culture, the Asian culture, the Black mm-hmm. culture, the Hispanic culture, so to them, some of those things are right.
Mm-hmm.
And until they're taught, well, in this environment, this is not right.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some things that, I have to be honest with you, if you tell me something and I think that you're not safe,
mm-hmm.
I have to report it.
Right.
So I need to let you know these are the things
mm-hmm.
as we're going through our day, as we're going through our year. I felt
mm-hmm.
it was my job to let them know these are things that are not safe
mm-hmm.
according to the laws that I work on.
Right.
So if I see these things,
right.
even if I think these things are going on,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to report these
yeah.
things. Because it's up to DCFS to
yeah.
investigate.
Yeah.
If I feel that mm-hmm. this is what. And I think
that's right.
it's so important that we are aware of in the different cultures and then that we educate the
mm-hmm.
children, because they might not think that it's wrong
mm-hmm.
if I'm slapped at home.
Mm-hmm.
Or they might not think it's wrong if I go to bed without dinner for
mm-hmm.
5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they're used to.
Right.
So we have to educate them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, that's
yeah.
not safe. That's not good.
We have to educate them, and we also need to give them a voice to educate us.
Yes.
So I'm curious, what are the rules back home for you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's normal for you guys back home, whether it's a different country or they've, like, they're like the second or third generation that's moved over here or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say something. I don't know if it's a question or a statement, but to what you were saying, different cultures are different. I'm from Belize, and
okay.
The culture is totally, totally different, and it's a lot of, let's hide that because it's an embarrassment issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you have to really be careful as well, because if the kid is a type of kid that, how can you say it, would go back and tell their parents or say something, that can actually get the kid in more trouble at home.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it might be a parent, mom, dad thing.
Yeah.
Then when, and I went through this myself, where you feel like that person is someone safe to go to, it could be your counselor at school, it could be anybody, and it ends up turning around on the kid. And unfortunately, when you leave that school or you leave that church or leave whoever you feel safe with and you go home, unfortunately you have to deal with your parents, you know, and then they're not, you could, they could come back to you that week after and say, hey, are you okay? And you're, they're just like, yeah, because they've been threatened by their parent.
Right.
To say, you know what?
Right.
Don't you go tell my business outside
this
house. Whatever happens in this house between me and your dad, or me and whoever, or between me and what I do to you, is between me, if that's it. It doesn't matter any U.S. law. It doesn't matter any Illinois law.
Right.
At the end of the day, and the kid is going to be scared, because if I go back and I say anything, one, they're going to take me out of here because of what the parent might have said. Oh, yeah, you go tell DC. Okay, they're going to take you out, and then you're going to go to foster care, and blah, blah, blah. So they're fearful of that, and then they're fearful of what consequences they have to deal with their parents. And at the end of the day, they might feel safe with you for those couple of hours,
right?
But they still have to go home, and that's where their belongings are. That's where their dog is. That's where everything they love. That's where it is. So they, making a safe plan with them is, it's amazing. It might work, but at the end of the day, sometimes it just won't work,
right?
You know, and you take that, to say that this kid might end up shutting down on me. If this kid shuts down on me, I lose her, or I lose him, and then it's gonna be too late at that point. So cultures make a big difference in it.
Yeah.
The kid makes a big difference in it, and if you're their youth counselor or their youth or whatever they feel safe with, you have to know the kid and how to approach it. And then you could kind of see sometimes too the parents and how, if you can or if you can't approach them, because if they stay in the car and blow their horn and that kid runs out and you never, they never come inside the church and sign them out,
right?
That's kind of a parent, you don't even know, how am I going to approach, because I never see her, I never call, and she never is in anything. So there's different, so be very careful on how to go approach that kid so you don't lose that kid, especially if they know you are their safe spot.
Right. I would...
I'm going to say this, but then we, I don't know if you've read our news lately, we just lost a five-year-old because, do you know about that?
No.
Well, there was a five-year-old, and the parents called the police and said, oh, he's missing. Well, the police did an investigation, said, this child didn't walk out of this house, so... And in a week's time, the parents confess that they killed this child. And it was really horrific. And this is, the burial and everything is this week. But in that space of those years, when the child was born with drugs in his system, there were all of these little signs and people calling, and it kept going on and on. So my thing is that we have to be aware that I can be concerned about what might happen if I don't report this or if I do report this. But research shows when you don't, usually things happen like what happened to this five-year-old. And I think that's what we have to be taught and educated on, and like what you're doing. That because of the different cultures, I don't think we cannot be concerned and put the safety things in place. When we don't,
Right.
So we have to be respectful of cultures.
Right.
But there still has to be laws and rules that are followed.
Right. And I would encourage you to find the local organizations in your communities that address these issues so that you know who to call, who you can follow up with, if you can connect them to a therapist, if you can connect them to other safe people so that the burden isn't solely on you. I'd also like to encourage you that if they're lost to you, they're not lost. Like, God knows where they are. He knows what they need. He knows the part that he needs you to play in their lives and all of the other people who will follow along. Even with that five-year-old, he wasn't lost to the Lord. The Lord never took his eye off him. And that's how I sleep at night, right? Like, I counsel women who are in crisis from domestic violence, okay? That's all that I do. So sometimes you have to send them home to their spouse, okay? I wanna just like stick them in my pocket and take them home with me. Can't do that. I'll get fired. But at the end of the day, I'm not the one who's in control of their future. I do what God has given me the ability to do, and then I let him carry it forward, okay? Even if it ends in death with this five-year-old, he's still not lost to the Lord. You know, we don't understand why it happened. It's horrific. It's horrible. And that's what pushes us to make better laws and to get more involved. It's what kind of motivates us to change it for the next kid. But ultimately, I want to take that burden off of you a little bit. Like, you're responsible for your part. You're not responsible for their eternity. Okay? Does anyone need to take a deep breath right now? Okay. Take it off. All right. We're close to being done with time. I set myself an alarm. So I'm going to breeze through these. These are things that I want you to be aware of that are out there. Okay? It's not so much resources as it is like maybe cause for concern. Like, just be aware. This is coming down the pike in our culture in the future. Okay? Cuddle groups. Yeah. Did you know that's a thing? Yeah. You know why it's a thing? Because they're not getting affection in their relationships. So you can go online, and in several different cities, pretty sure Chicago is one of them, you can look for someone to cuddle with. And there's like this whole like non-disclosure agreement, and like, we're agreeing that this isn't going to turn sexual. And if it is going to turn sexual, this is how we get out of it, because we don't want it to happen. So that's cuddle groups. It's kind of like Tinder a little bit, where you like get an app and you're like, oh, I would like to cuddle with them. Yeah. Okay, it's a real thing. Robots. Okay, this one is going to like make you kind of squirm a little, because I squirm. There was a proposal in a city, an unnamed city in Texas, that was gratefully turned down. There was also the same proposal was made in an unnamed city in Tennessee, where I may or may not be living right now. It was turned down from an organization who wants to open a business where you can go have sex with robots. Okay? I went to a training, not about that, but I went to a training where he brought it up, and he said, it would not surprise me if we see these popping up in major cities in the next 10 years. Yeah. 10 years. Okay? Just be on the lookout. It's becoming very easy to get your sexual needs met in very unhealthy ways. Okay? Social media investigation. So I work for the police department, and you know how Snapchat, the videos, they're supposed to like disappear? They don't. They don't disappear. Okay? So if sexual assaults happen and they're recorded through Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook or the ones that I don't know about yet, detectives and law enforcement agencies can still find those videos. So that might make you feel better or a little bit worse, depending on how risque your videos are, okay? This one, we are not going to this website. You can go to that website on your own if you'd like. This is the National Association of Man Boy Love something. I forget. They're an organization that is real. They raise money. They are trying to pass laws to drop the age of consent and make it okay for men and young boys to be in a romantic relationship together. Okay? Anyone squirming?
Yes.
Okay. The Dating Project is a video on, when, how did we watch that? On Amazon? I think.
Maybe.
Amazon Prime? This is actually a really good documentary on hookup culture. And this woman at a university has a class where their project is you have to go ask someone on a date. Like, they don't know how to do it. And when you're on a date, this is what you're going to do and this is what you're not going to do. You're not going to go hook up with them. You're going to, like, meet them at a coffee shop and then you're going to go home separately. Okay? It's a really interesting video. One that I didn't put on here was the Liberated documentary on Netflix. That's a really good one. Again, that one has a lot of graphic things, so buyer beware. Hookup culture. It's in there. The video was not. But hookup culture is you separate your emotions. Remember, we're whole people. We have physical, spiritual, and emotional needs. You separate the physical and everything else. And so whatever you do to your body doesn't matter. It's just sex. It doesn't connect you to anybody. It doesn't do anything to you emotionally. It's just sex. And this is a very prominent culturally accepted belief. Okay? We'll talk more about that in a second. Anyone see the Unplanned movie? It's about abortion. It's a really great movie. Fun fact, you can get an abortion and not tell your parents about it, but you can't go see this movie unless you're with a parent and over the 17 years of age, because it's a rated R movie. Okay, Love Thy Body. All right, this is a book. This is a book I highly recommend. I wanted to talk about this for the entire session, but I figured you might like some more practical things. Anyone like philosophy or theology or theory and just kind of like these abstract concepts? Okay, this is the book for you. This book talks about, let me see the table of contents. The Joy of Death, which is abortion. Dear Valued Constituent, which is euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide. Schizoid Sex, which is hookup culture. It's got a chapter on the homosexual narrative. It has a chapter on the transgender culture and social media. So it covers a lot of topics, a lot of like watershed topics for our generation. And the root of all of this is that our cultural worldview is that the mind and body is separate. It's not connected. So if my body tells me I'm a girl, but my mind tells me I'm a boy, the mind is a king. Trumps what my body tells me. If my body tells me I'm a boy, but my mind tells me I'm attracted to boys, mind trumps it. We go with what the mind says instead of what the body tells us. With abortion, it's like it's just a piece of material. Like, actually, research proves that life begins much sooner than people were willing to admit before. So now it's like the difference between personhood and humanhood. So you might be a human, but you're not a person yet. And there are some people in the research community in other countries who would argue that you're not actually a person until you're two. So technically abortion could happen up until the age of two. Okay? It's really important for us to know that we are whole people. Okay? We're whole people. And that's actually what makes Christian worldviews more people affirming than the cultural worldview that we live in right now. Because we say we are a whole person. Sex affects emotions. Sex impacts your body. That's why hookup culture is so easy right now, because it's just sex. It has nothing to do with my brain. I just want sex. Okay? We're whole people, so no matter how much they tell you it's just sex, it's not just sex. And the church knows that. We gotta be more bold about sharing that in a kind and compassionate way with the people around us, so that we influence culture and culture doesn't influence us. Okay, really deep breath. Those ones were hard. Okay. I like this one. When you pressure me for nude pics, I throw open my mouth a little. Okay. Here we go. So thatsnotcool.com is a great resource for teens. And it has like a game on there where it takes you through questions about like, is this cool or not cool in a relationship? He's like pressuring me for my Facebook password. Is that cool or not cool?
Not cool.
Not cool. Okay. So it goes through a lot of questions like that. They also have developed an app called, this website is called thatsnotcool.com. The app that they have created is called the Respect Effect. And what they do with the app is they put out daily challenges for teens, created by teens, to help them learn what respectful and healthy boundaries are. So I'm gonna do something nice for somebody and not expect anything in return. Awesome, you just learned how to be a kind person. I'm gonna listen to somebody's problem without trying to tell them my story instead. Awesome, you learned empathy. You learned how to be a good listener. So it tells them what they've learned, which is really important. And then they can like post pictures of it or whatever, and it's very safe and secure. But you can see like how that respect effect is impacting your community. So there, I was looking to see where it pops up on the map, and there's none of it happening in Nashville. So I got some work to do there. But there is a city in Indiana, I think it's like Mishawaka or something, and they've got like little, like, ta-da, we did it. It doesn't like show a picture of the kid, it just says, this happened around here, this happened around here, this happened around here. I don't remember if there are any in Chicago or not, I don't think there were. So you guys could be the first to institute this. And it's a really great resource if you want to pull it up on your phone. There's a lot of great information about that. This is kind of out of order. We should have talked about this earlier. What do I do if someone tells me they've been sexually assaulted? Start by believing them. Okay? Say, I believe you. I'm sorry that happened. I'm here for you. Okay? It's easy. Because you're not their therapist, you're not their case manager, or maybe there are some of you on here, I don't know. But you're their safe person. So you don't have to solve the problem for them, you just need to listen. They need to be able to tell you their story. Okay? We do need to take into consideration mandated reporting, so don't promise to keep a secret. Listen more than you speak, give them unconditional love, and follow up with them repeatedly. Even if they don't respond back to you, if you're like sending them a text or leaving a voicemail or whatever, even if they don't respond, keep reaching out, keep following up with them. Okay, how do I know if they're telling the truth? This shouldn't have popped up yet, but it's a trick question. It's not your job. It's not your job to figure it out, unless you're a police officer. Then it's your job. But here's some ways that you can tell, and I'll go through this quickly. If someone is telling you the truth, they're giving you information, even if it reflects poorly on them. So they're gonna say, yeah, I was at this place at this time, and this person was there, and he did this to me, or she did this to me, and this is what happened. Well, why were you there? That is not the point. Something happened to them, okay? People who are lying try to convince you stuff didn't happen. That wasn't me, I wasn't there. So with the example, I sexually assaulted her, okay? It's not a good example for the first side. I don't know why I put it over there. For the people who are lying, they're gonna be like, it wasn't me, I didn't do it. It wasn't sexual. I wasn't aroused. She didn't get aroused. He didn't get aroused. It wasn't sexual. I didn't assault them because they asked for it. They were seducing me, okay? And so they're trying to convince you that something didn't happen, okay? Is that a helpful distinction? Like, someone who's telling you the truth is giving you information about what happened because they want you to know. And someone who's trying to avoid it, they're covering it up and they're being like, oh, I wasn't there, or if I was, I wasn't with them, you know, things like that. These are national hotline numbers. You can take a picture of it or find it in the PowerPoint later. Suicide prevention, teen dating abuse, sexual assault. There's a runaway safe line, crime victims. And I didn't know this, but there's a street harassment hotline. I don't know what they do, but if you're harassed on the street, it's nice to know there's someone who will listen to you. This Trevor line right here is for LGBTQ plus youth. I don't know where the Army stands on LGBTQ stuff, but it, at the risk of sounding disrespectful, it kind of doesn't matter because the teens are struggling with it, so you gotta like help them and talk to them and be nice to them, okay? All right, deep breath, we're almost done. Okay, this is my information. This is actually my phone number, so like be cool, okay? If you have any questions, if you want a follow-up phone conversation, if you need to email me or want the PowerPoint because you didn't get it the first time around or something, I'm available to you with any questions that you have. I will confess that I'm not the greatest at promptly getting back to emails, but you can send me a text or something. Yeah, I think that's it. Do we have any final questions? I do have all the resources here, like in the full link, so that if you have the PowerPoint, you can like type them out or whatever. But that's all I got. Do you guys have questions or comments or anything? I think we have like 5 minutes.
I think one of the comments is that we have to be more concerned with that these things aren't just happening with teens, that they're also in our community happening at the grade school level.
Yes.
And the middle school level.
Yes, 100%.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oral sex and
yep.
Sex, those things. And so they have actually, I think in some schools, lowered the grade level that they're teaching sex education because of that.
Yeah. And that means the church needs to also respond and teach our kids about sex at an earlier age. Okay? So we tell them first. We want to be the ones to set that foundation. Right? That's all I got. Thank you for being so, like, participative. That's not a word, but, you know, thank you.